You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to First Take. Coming to you live from the Heineken River Deck here at Pier 17. Let's get to America's team, y'all, who have the 10th pick. We know Jerry Jones is reportedly enamored with Kyle Pitts out of Florida, but he walked that back, saying Tuesday his interest in Pitts has been overstated and the team wouldn't break the bank to land him. But he is willing to go rogue. Jerry, on the mic.
It's a distortion for this draft and where we are there. It implies something that's just not the case. We're not going to go in there and spend inordinate collateral or value to maneuver up there so that we can get Pitt. Don't be stupid over your needs. What's exciting about the 10th pick is you could very easily get an opportunity to do something unconventional here.
I like unconventional. Max, talk to me about unconventional. Would you be shocked if Jerry does trade up to try to get Pitts?
I would be shocked. I don't see it happening. First of all, when I first started hearing, I was thinking, this is a smokescreen. Jerry knows he's going to get the best corner in the draft, most likely. They're going to have their pick, and we know who it's going to be, right? So, and that's what they need. So why, and by the way, are we sure that Surtain is not the best player in the draft or best defensive player in the draft? Are we sure? But also, the Cowboys have a potent offense. And by the way, they got a lot of tight ends. None of them are like Kyle Pitts, but they're good. You know, Blake Jarwin's coming back, and they signed a couple guys. They're good. They're solid there. And they have receiving targets everywhere you look. But even more importantly than that, Stephen A., when I look at the Cowboys, I keep going back to that Johnny Manziel draft. Obviously, the showman that Jerry is, how could he not have been tempted? He even publicly said so. And what they wind up doing? Zach Martin. Stephen Jones, I think, as he's come up in the organization, has had a good kind of steadying effect on his dad. They make the reason that the Cowboys usually have pretty good drafts is they make the solid football move normally, and I expect that to happen again. And in this case, Jerry's even telling you, look, if someone falls to him, if Pitts is there for him at 10, yeah, he'll take Pitts. I believe that. But I don't think he's going to, as he said, trade draft capital to move up and grab him when they have other needs and they're in a great position to fill them.
Maximus, Maximus, Maximus. You still haven't learned, buddy. Let me tell you something, buddy, right now.
Oh, here we go.
Are you aware of the fact that the Dallas Cowboys gave up the fifth most points last year and in giving up over 2,500 yards rushing was the second worst rushing attack and rushing defense rather than all of football? Obviously, they have some needs on the defensive side of the ball, so it makes perfect sense that they would go that route. And then when you think about the defensive side of the ball with Trevon Diggs playing one of the corner spots for them and looking quite impressive, I might add, you would think Surtain out of Alabama would be the way to go because obviously he's the best cornerback in the draft, and having him to shore up one side of the field really elevates your defensive prowess. That would be the logical step, right, Max? Right, Molly? Mm-hmm. But you are so wrong. I'm not saying they're going to take offensive player. They're going to move up to take Pitts, but I don't put anything past that button, my buddy Jerry Jones, and here's why. What did Jerry Jones do? The most notable thing that Jerry Jones did this offseason, Jerry Jones signed Dak Prescott to that long-term deal that he's been after. And think about that for a second here. Jerry Jones likes to look good. Well, what will make Jerry Jones look good better than Dak Prescott looking all world, validating that money that Jerry Jones decided to dole out to that man? Think about this. Amari Cooper looked good, had a 1,000-yard receiving season. CeeDee Lamb, your rookie last year, had nearly a 1,000 yards receiving. Mike Gallup is still there. You get a tight end, and especially with Ezekiel Elliott taking a step back, you look at Dak Prescott, you just paid him that money. You want him to play lights out. You want your investment to look like a good one. And what you do, you go there and you get a generational tight end like Pitts. And you say, excuse me, what about the defense? What about the defense? Well, Jerry Jones is able to say, hey, it was schemes. Schematically speaking, I mean, we shouldn't have played the defense that Mike Nolan was playing. He's no longer there. We got Dan Quinn. He used to be a head coach in the Atlanta Falcons. We know how that worked out. But guess what? He was an elite defensive coordinator in Seattle before he got to Atlanta. So as a result, since we're going to be doing things differently schematically, DeMarcus Lawrence will look better, and so will the rest of that defense. And we obviously got a number of picks moving down the line to address those concerns. Go for the best talent. And if Jerry Jones can pull it off, Max Kellerman,
you know what, though,
that's exactly what he's going
to
do.
You know who he'd have to trade with to get that done? He'd have to trade with San Francisco. He'd have to trade with San Francisco because
we're not talking about what's going to happen.
Cincinnati and Miami, Pittsburgh not going to be there.
Don't change the subject. We're not talking about what will happen because we understand that nobody's going to do it. But what I'm saying to you is that if he could, he would.
Well,
if he could, he would sit up there and say, hey, you know what? This is something he would do. I don't think it's going to happen either, but only because he can't.
Stephen A., what I'm saying is it wouldn't be impossible to make a trade with San Francisco.
Not impossible, but highly unlikely.
Because if San Francisco wants their choice of quarterback, it is unlikely Atlanta, Cincinnati, or Miami takes one. San Francisco could move down a little bit. It would have to involve another team, I suppose.
I don't think they're moving down.
And still wind up with their quarterback.
I don't think they're moving down. You know, he's a gunslinger, that Jerry Jones. You understand? He don't want to do that. He don't want to do that. He want to roll the dice. He want to take a chance. You understand? That's what he wants to do. If he could do it, he will. He won't do it because I don't think he can.
All facts. All facts. All right. He just said he wants to do something unconventional. You know he's trying to stir the pot and have a little fun with the media.
He has a stalking
cowboy. That's what
he's
about. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
You're looking at a list created by Julius Dr. J. Irving of his top two all-time NBA teams on a recent episode posted up with Chris Hayes. So one notable absence on this list, LeBron James. Here's what Dr. J. had to say about that.
When you look at, you know, LeBron and you know, anybody he sort of picks with him to be, you know, playing with so many guys. He's the guy who has led the charge in terms of super teams being put together.
Yeah.
You know, when he put together a team in Miami, he basically put together a team together in Cleveland as well and put together a team in Los Angeles or whatever. Mm-hmm. So he could pick his own team. I ain't gonna pick his team.
Max, what do you think? Should LeBron be penalized for playing with super teams.
Of course not. And by the way, I love Dr. J. I grew up loving Dr. J. But this is ridiculous. Dr. J, this is ridiculous. Who cares if the GM puts the team together or the player does? Let's look. Dr. J was the best player in the ABA. He was an ABA MVP. He was an ABA champion. He was an ABA scoring leader at double-digit rebounds. He's one of the all-time greats, and in fact, has become underrated. He's in that top uppermost tier of greatest players ever. Let's look at that Sixers team he won a championship with when he was a little past his prime, but still an all-star. Maurice Cheeks, see the all-star selections? Four-time all-star selection. Andrew Toney, a 20-point-a-game guy, two-time all-star. Dr. J, one of the best players in the game. We're marketing now. We look back and say it was Magic Bird. But back then, the commercials were Dr. J versus Bird before they were Magic versus Bird. Ivoroni was a starting power forward, but Bobby Jones was off the bench, sixth man of the year. Moses Malone was the best player in basketball. People have funny memories about this. He used to give the Lakers and Kareem hell when he was in Houston, and he was an MVP, went to the Sixers. He was the dude saying 4-4-4, meaning he's going to sweep everyone, then went 4-5-4, swept the Lakers in the finals. I mean, that's a super team. An MVP or multiple MVPs, multiple All-Stars. Who cares if the GM puts it together, Stephen A., or if the player does? That's one. Two, when you look at Dr. J's team, Stephen A., I don't think he knows really why he did it that way. It seems pretty obvious to me. The dudes he grew up watching and idolizing are all first team. The dudes he played against who came a little later were all second team and no new dudes. Because one thing is for sure, you can put any combination of players you want on the all-time team. Two guys have to be on every all-time team. Michael Jordan and LeBron James. Those guys are on every all-time team. But the first team, those are the guys he idolized growing up because we always mythologize those people. And the other guys were the guys he saw and played against toward the end of his career especially, and he respects them. And the new dudes, he doesn't have the same feeling for.
Well, first of all, let me say this. Before I even address the point, LeBron shouldn't be penalized. You're right about that. But I want to say that Hall of Famers like Dr. J have a right to feel the way that they feel. If I take issue with Dr. J, it's that Wilt and Bill Russell were on the same team. No, it's one or the other. You understand? It's one or the other. They went head-to-head against one another. They were the two iconic figures. You got to go at it. You got to pick one over the other.
Both centers.
You can't have them on the same team, number one. And number two, the great Karl Malone, one of the top scorers in NBA history, no doubt. I wouldn't have had him on either team because, to be honest with you, as good as Karl Malone was, particularly in pick-and-roll situations, pick-and-pop situations, and clearly on the break as well, he could finish. I think in terms of a back-to-the-basket prototypical power forward, I would pick both Tim Duncan and Kevin McHale ahead of Karl Malone. I really, really would. In terms of 10 feet and in as a power forward, when the way the game was played, Karl Malone, back to the basket, couldn't touch those two. Couldn't touch them. I don't care what anybody says. Not in terms of back to the basket. He could shoot perimeter shots. John Stockton fit him in pick and pops and on a fast break, sure. But in back to the basket, no. Tim Duncan, Kevin McHale. So I wouldn't put Karl Malone second team. Now to get to your bigger point. When you brought up the Philadelphia 76ers, here's what I think you're missing, Max Kellerman. Dr. J isn't talking about just super teams. He's talking about you instigating the process. Moses Malone was traded to the Philadelphia. It doesn't matter to you, but it matters to them. In other words, they can't control what they can control. When you talk to Hall of Famers, which obviously you know that I do, the position is what you instigate, what you look for, what you want.
Clearly.
Remember when Charles Barkley and LeBron James got into it? Because Charles Barkley was basically saying, what do you want, everything? I mean, damn, you don't want to compete? Now, obviously, Shaq and Kenny Smith came to the defense of LeBron James because they felt that Charles Barkley went too far when he questioned his willingness to compete at that particular moment in time. I'm just using that to crystallize the fact that when Hall of Famers compare themselves to other future Hall of Famers and they're looking at the game themselves, it's not just the circumstances that you're living with, it's what you instigate. Dr. J didn't instigate that. Andrew Toney was drafted in the second. Maurice Cheeks was drafted in the second round. Mark Ivoroni was drafted in the third round. I forgot where Andrew Toney specifically was picked, but those things happen. And so when I look at it from that perspective, I say, excuse me, Dr. J, no, I think he's wrong here, because there's no way on earth you can have the second best player we've ever seen in the history of basketball, not even on one of the top two teams. That is ridiculous. That is blasphemous. And Dr. J is absolutely positively wrong. But as a Hall of Famer, I do understand what he is accusing LeBron of in terms of instigating something that Kevin Durant and others have now taken to another level.
Well, I hear what you're saying about the way Hall of Famers perceive it. I'm sorry, I just disagree with them. Of course they're entitled to feel. They built the game. They're entitled to feel however they want. I'm just saying, in the end, you got to play ball. And if you're on a super team, I don't care as a fan if a GM put it together or if you put it together. Now, I take exception to what KD did with the Warriors. They were already a super team. He chose, I'm going to join them. They don't have to give anything up. I'm just going to join them. And at that point, no one has a chance to do anything. But you remember the Sixers that year when they got Moses Malone? It was like, oh, here they come. And they destroyed everybody. They swept the Lakers. So, you know, that's Dr. J's championship. It takes a super team 9 times out of 10 to win a championship. Well, I don't know if any of LeBron's Miami teams were better than that Sixers team.
No, but what you can't ignore is the point that Hall of Fame, and again, we're not getting on LeBron here because we both disagree with Dr. J. Okay, LeBron James, you can't have a first team in the NBA history without having LeBron James on it, as far as I'm concerned. But having said all of that, let's understand again what the point was. You say it doesn't matter whether the player or whether the team puts you together. Well, you got to remember, the better the talent is around you, the less of a load you're asked to carry,
Of
a load you have to carry and stuff like that. So now we take that element, that component, Max, and then we say, you instigated it? You were looking? Because to a Hall of Famer, when they talk to me and they're like, hold them accountable, Stephen A., make sure you hold them to the same standard you held us to, what they're talking about is you looked for the easy way out? You looked to bypass that arduous process that we had to endure in order to elevate yourself?
Oh, you just
hit on
something.
That's what they're challenging us to do.
You just hit on something, Stephen A. Part of that is legit competitive nature of the Hall of Famers, which I agree
sure.
with. I get what they're saying. Part of it is a little crabs in a bucket, though. Like, we had to go through, like, sometimes you hear older players talk about what the players nowadays are making, and there's a little bit of, like, at least wistfulness, if not outright envy, like, oh, I wish I was around nowadays. So
sure.
The way things are done has changed. I'm sure players back then wish they were as empowered as these players are, and I'm not going to hold the player empowerment against the players. Of course, Dr. J can say whatever. Dr. J is one of the greatest ever and one of the greatest dudes ever, too, right? I'm not at that Dr. J. I just disagree with him. And
yeah,
the biggest point for me is he put his idols on the first team. He put his peers on the second team, and he left all the new dudes off.
But you also have to remember that what he's trying to say is that, excuse me, again, you holding us to the standard, because us in the media and people who make these choices and ultimately chronicle and record history and document history, they're asking us to take those things into consideration, what they had to endure compared to what these dudes had to endure in order to elevate themselves to the level of greatness they once enjoyed.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Have you ridden an electric bike yet? Well, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to more exploring time outside on their bikes. So they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range for up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome. So you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting lectricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Some news in from Tampa Bay this morning. Antonio Brown re-signing with the Bucs. The one-year deal is worth up to $6.5 million. He told NFL Network that this morning. Ryan Clark joining the show. RC, what is the good word? It's been a minute.
Oh, it's good, man. It's good. It's draft time, Molly. It's the best time of the year, at least for people like me.
I love it. All right, guys. I will start with you here, Max. What are the chances now with this AB signing? I mentioned it all show long, 22 starters returning for this Bucks team, that the Bucks repeat.
They're really good. I mean, the Bucks at this moment should be the odds-on favorite to get out of the NFC, if not to win the whole thing. Let's see how we feel after the draft. But as you mentioned, Molly, when do you return all 22? And as Marcus Spears brought up in the first hour of this show, the fact is you're able to do it partly because you didn't just get, like in the NBA, you get a Blake Griffin who's toward the end, or LeBron, you know, because he wants to play on a super team, or Mike Miller with LeBron early on. You got an Antonio Brown, who still might be in his prime. We don't know. It's not like he was off the field because of his play on the field. And by the way, Antonio Brown in his prime put up numbers that would fit comfortably in the profile of Jerry Rice or Randy Moss. He's in that kind of argument at his best. And, guys, Tom Brady, it's about trust. He trusted, like, Julian Edelman. He trusts Gronkowski. Well, who caught the touchdowns in the Super Bowl? There's AB. There's Gronk, the two best pass catchers of the era, and two guys who he has real trust with. So you mean to tell me now, Brady, instead of trusting Edelman, Edelman is now AB, and they got a defense and an offensive line? Ooh, it's a whole lot. It's a whole lot.
I don't have much to add. Antonio Brown is what he is. I think that, you know, we got so caught up in the shenanigans and the flat-out stupidity. Mm-hmm. When you are, it's a Thursday, and all you have to do is shut up until Tuesday, and you're guaranteed $29 million, and you can't shut up. Something wrong with you, period. There's no way around it. And so because of that, we got caught up in all of that, you know, the secretly taping John Gruden calling him and stuff like that, and social media and going to the cops, going at the cops on social media and stuff like that. It just seemed bizarre. We got caught up in all of that, that it was easy to forget this is one of the best wide receivers the game has ever seen. And when we're talking about Antonio Brown and what he brings to the table, you just can't question his greatness as a talent at the wide receiver spot. And then to show up in Tampa the way that he did and cause no trouble, play in the Super Bowl hurt, by the way, still catches a touchdown, still catches five catches, ends up helping them win a Super Bowl championship. And this was him rusty. This was him preoccupied. Well, this season, all of this stuff is behind him. NFL, the case is going away, and we understand that. And as a result of it, he's now free to focus on just football. And he's coming in at $3.1 million. Now, this is a man that has been about the bag. He's been about his bag, but he comes there for $3.1 million. I think it's safe to assume Antonio Brown could have gotten paid more than $3.1 million. But he went to Tampa because Tom Brady's there. And Tom Brady, that's who he wants to play with. That's who he wants to be with. And let's understand that while we're sitting here praising Antonio Brown and talent, let's give a lot of the praise to Tom Brady. Tom Brady wanted him in New England. He goes to Tampa. He wanted him there. We know Bruce Arians didn't want him. He was on the record saying he didn't need that in his locker room until Tom Brady got there.
Right.
Then all of a sudden he was willing to take him on and take the chance, albeit with a no-tolerance policy. But then he goes there. And remember, he needed 11 receptions to get a $250,000 bonus. And Tom Brady threw that brother the ball 15 times and got him his 11 receptions and got him his $250,000. Antonio Brown knows he could go elsewhere to make more, but he's found a brother in Tom Brady that he loves the hell out of. And I think that we got to step back and just attribute the greatness of Tom Brady, not just as a talent, but as a leader, because clearly he wants that brother there, and Antonio Brown was willing to take less just to be with him. I think that can't be ignored.
Now, that absolutely can't be ignored, but I'm going to go back to something Max said. When you think about the fact that they signed all 22 starters, you go out, you get Giovanni Bernard, You now have Antonio Brown back, who's going to be your third wide receiver if you're talking about the perimeter, but he's the number one. And no, maybe he's not in his prime where he had that six-year stretch where he was in the conversation for arguably the best wide receiver of all time. But think about the way he came along toward the end of the season, the game against the Washington football team, obviously the way he played in the Super Bowl. This dude is still a star, but he doesn't have to be a star every day in Tampa Bay. In Tampa Bay, if he got the right matchup, he'll make a play. And what we saw from him is with Tom Brady, with being in that atmosphere, with showing the gratefulness he has for that dude being a mentor, for the person he's been to him, he also toes the company line of the way to behave. What they've created in Tampa Bay is different. It's very Patriot way, but it's Tom Brady way. It's Tom Brady wanting to do certain things. It's Tom Brady bringing people in. Excuse me, I don't know whose phone that is, but it's in my house. It's Tom Brady understanding that he needs these particular pieces in order to be great, and those pieces will take less money to be with him. Antonio Brown has reinvented himself. Antonio Brown has become someone else away from the field, but he is still a football player on it that does amazing things. And now they run it back in a way I don't think even Kansas City did. They run it back and they're better. What happens when teams win the Super Bowls, fellas? People go elsewhere and get money because they want to bring that Super Bowl pedigree into 31 other locker rooms. Well, none of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers left because they know what they have is special. Antonio Brown re-signing is just a part of that.
I like the fact, Ryan, that you got that old school newsroom telephone in your house somewhere. You got the rotary phone in the house. Hey, that's a rotary phone ring.
It hasn't rang in so long, I forgot it even worked. So I wasn't expecting
that's
it.
From the 70s. You got a phone in your house from the 70s.
For safety purposes, Max, okay? Are we good with this? We want to move on here. We want to keep going.
Yeah,
all right,
let's do it.
We'll keep it going. In an interview with NFL Network earlier this week, former NDSU quarterback Trey Lance said he's excited to prove people wrong again. He compared himself to a former quarterback from his alma mater, Carson Wentz, as an example of someone who came from playing FCS football and played well as a rookie. Stephen A., is Trey Lance the quarterback with the most to prove considering what school he's coming from?
No, I don't feel that way. I don't feel that way. I think the quarterback with the most to prove is Zach Wilson, because Zach Wilson is going to be the number two overall pick. The Jets have been sold on him for a couple of months now. He's out of BYU. Everybody's talking about him, and he is the individual primarily responsible for the dip that Justin Fields has taken. Coming out of the finishing the college football season, we've been talking about Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. And all of a sudden, there's Mac Jones and there's Trey Lance. And, you know, but clearly the first one was Zach Wilson being in that New York market, playing for the New York Jets, obviously bypassing Justin Fields, them being so sold on him, even though the level of competition he went up against doesn't compare to what Justin Fields had to go up against. All of those things considered, I think that Zach Wilson is the one with the most to prove. Lance coming out of North Dakota State, you know, with Carson Wentz having the trouble that he's had, that he had last season before ultimately being dealt from Philadelphia to Indianapolis. We know that. That's well documented. But he had some good years, and we know because of Carson Wentz and how he was once an MVP candidate, the potential coming out of that school. So we've seen that before. And I think it's not beyond the realm of comprehension that Trey Lance could come into the NFL and play lights out. Not to say that's the case with Zach Wilson either. But with Zach Wilson being at the number two solidified for all of these months, I think in that and being in the New York market, I think that puts immense pressure on him.
That's a very good argument, but I'm going to make a better one right now. The real answer to this is yes, Trey Lance does have the most to prove. He looks like the total package. You could argue he has the most upside of anyone. You could argue he might turn out to be the best. But there are two things that he has to prove, and everyone else, there's just one. Like, Mac Jones and Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields don't have to prove the same thing in terms of competition because they've gone up against the strongest competition at the collegiate level, right? Zach Wilson does, and so does Trey Lance. But Zach Wilson has a deeper resume, and what we've seen sometimes in the draft is guys who look really good. Remember, I was very high on Dwayne Haskins. And I know Trey Lance physically has more than Dwayne Haskins. I get it. Dwayne Haskins, you know, played against some very good competition and I thought got better as the year went on, the whole thing. But he had a shallow resume. He didn't start a lot of games. Trey Lance's resume is also shallow. It's good, but it's shallow. So he has the Zach Wilson competition thing going against him, and he has the experience factor going against him. And for those reasons alone, he has more to prove. Those are the things he has to prove. Those are more question marks by him, even though physically and reading defense and everything, people really like him. But not very experienced, not against the top opposition. Most to prove.
Absolutely not. I can't believe that Max is, I know what it is. There's been a lot of fighting going on, and y'all guys been in the UFC. Ryan Garcia's getting out of fights, and then Stephen A, you got to host 17 shows, and so you really can't be on it, and you really can't pay attention to everything, and you guys have just missed the 3 months of the negativity that has surrounded Justin Fields. So maybe I'll bring it back up for you. Going into last season, it was Trevor Lawrence 1, Justin Fields 2. By my account and by some other people who really watched the 2019 film, it wasn't that much of a gap between the two, but obviously we felt great about Trevor Lawrence. So we go through the season, we get to the semifinals game, and not only did Justin Fields outplay Trevor Lawrence, but it wasn't even close. The performance by Justin Fields was amazing. It was virtuoso. He showed leadership. He showed toughness. He showed arm strength. He showed skill. He showed all these things. And then he gets in the championship, plays banged up, and he's continuing to show the type of grit and intangibles that we rave about for quarterbacks. And then we get to this process right away. Zach Wilson is the number two quarterback. Zach Wilson is Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. That bumps Justin Fields now down. And now the San Francisco 49ers jump up to 3. That has to be for Justin Fields. No way this guy has fallen so far. But now it's Mac Jones. And then this morning, Adam Schefter reports the only other decision they make is Trey Lance. And we're going to say a guy that has fallen from grace that far, who has had to deal with off-the-field question and different rumors about the type of person he is away from the grass, that dude doesn't have something to prove. The guy that went to Ohio State, that started for 2 seasons in 2019, 50 total touchdowns, 1 interceptions, who's now not being talked about in the top 3 picks at all among these 5 quarterbacks. That's the dude that has something to prove.
I know what's going on.
Every day, Justin Fields is going to have to step up and prove to us that he wasn't supposed to fall. That
see what he did,
was
Stephen
the guy
A.
that
see
entered the 2020
did.
Season.
See what Ryan did?
What'd
he
I do?
Just, it's called projection. I see you tweeting about MMA and boxing all the time. I see you watching Stephen A. You just, and you try to put that on us. You just made the argument for Stephen A. and for me. Why Zach Wilson has more to prove. Why Trey Lance has more to prove. You just made the argument. You
absolutely
said,
not.
Basically, tape don't lie. He has a deep resume. He has success against the top programs. You saw it with your own eyes. You're laying out the case why Justin Fields shouldn't be dropping. Well, if that's the case, then these dudes put ahead of him have more
Max.
To prove.
Well,
no.
let me hold on, Ryan. Let me chime in before you go, because obviously you deserve the last word on this. But let me say this to you. First of all, we didn't forget Justin Fields. We're just looking at it in reverse. You're saying that because Justin Fields and the negativity that has come associated with them and the fact that he will drop, that is what will put the pressure on him. I'm saying no. It's because of the one individual's most conspicuously elevated above him. Also, that's going to be in the New York market. That's why he has that kind of pressure on him. Then we also have to remember, Ryan, that before Justin Fields was doing his thing at Ohio State, there was a dude at Ohio State that threw 50 touchdowns, okay? And he ended up falling to number 15, and his name was Dwayne Haskins. And then comes to the NFL, and I think primarily due to his lack of discipline, more so than a lack of talent.
Right.
I think his lack of discipline hurt him, but nevertheless, you know, he's not even in Washington anymore. He's now in Pittsburgh. And damn it, I ain't going to lie to you, I didn't want him there. So when you look at it from that perspective, I mean, the fact that you threw 50 touchdowns, and then you end up getting picked behind Daniel
One
Jones out of Duke again, I would tell you that would be another element that I would use to elevate the pressure towards Zach Wilson over the pressure towards Justin Fields if indeed Justin Fields ends up dropping like reportedly he will?
Yeah, but to me, I think when you're Zach Wilson and you're Trey Lance, if you do get drafted in that spot, you know what you're doing? You're trying to prove people right, right? You're coming out and you're saying, the Jets, I'm going to prove you right. For believing in me, I'm going to show you that I'm everything you thought I could be. If you're Trey Lance and you happen to go third or you go fourth or you go fifth, somebody trades up for you, you say, you know what? I'm going to show the world that you made the right decision. Every day, Justin Fields is going to have to go out and prove to people that he's not all the negative things they said he was. And you got to remember now, if Trey Lance does something, if Zach Wilson does something, we say, you know what? The competition's a little elevated. Let's give him a little time. We drafted these guys on potential. We knew they still had some work to do, but look at the things that they could do. Look at the special traits they have. Justin Fields misreads something. He's a little bit late. See, that's what it was right there. You know, that's what we were talking about. Remember the Northwestern game when he threw three interceptions? He was late on his reads there, right? Justin Fields doesn't do something on the field, or you hear something about a practice trait. Yep, that's what they were talking about. Remember we had all that fodder about Justin Fields and the way that he approached the game? That's what Justin Fields is going to have to deal with every single day until he proves otherwise. These other dudes, we're going to give them chance after chance. We're going to say, yeah, you know, Zach Wilson ain't really had it. To me, when Justin Fields has dropped, or when he does drop on draft night, the pressure is immediately on him to prove everyone wrong.
One thing is for sure, Mac Jones better read the hell out of some defenses. He better read some defenses, not miss a word, a comma, a punctuation mark, nothing. He better be a defense scholar.
let's keep it going, guys. Obviously, we've been talking about it all morning. The draft is tomorrow, and we continue our draft blitz. Appearing on the Rich Eisen Show, Ravens head coach John Harbaugh guaranteed Lamar Jackson would have his five-year option picked up as the franchise looks to the future. As for Thursday, the Ravens currently have the 27th pick, and Mel Kiper projects they'll take wide receiver Terrace Marshall Jr. out of LSU. Stephen A., tell me this. First of all, with these picks, do you think Lamar should have a say in who they take in their first-round picks?
No. Why should he? The fact of the matter is, you know, listen, Lamar has a lot to learn as a quarterback just throwing the football. As a runner, he's absolutely electrifying. And we all recognize the fact that they could use an upgrade at the receiver spot. But, you know, he's one of those dudes that, you know, he just talks about what he's going to do on the football field. I remember when he was drafted and my man Primetime Deion Sanders was working for the NFL Network and he interviewed him immediately following him being selected as the last pick in the first round. He was like, let's go. He said, it's on now. We're going to see. And he showed up and showed out and ended up becoming an NFL MVP. But in terms of him, you know, breaking down film and talking about what the team needs are and things of that nature, that's not something he ever engages in. He's one of those people that hasn't shown it, at least to me. And obviously I'm not inside the film room and I'm not inside the locker room with him and his teammates and his coaches, but I don't get the impression that he's graduated to that point where he literally sits there and has conversations with the coaches and with executives about the needs that his team has. He seems to be the kind of guy that's focused on his Herculean talent, what it brings to the table, and what kind of difference he as an individual can make, as opposed to having that cerebral approach where you see all things and know all things about everybody, not just you, but everybody around you. And until you see that from somebody, no, they don't play a role in making those kind of decisions as far
as
I'm concerned.
The question is, should Lamar Jackson have a role? I say yes, and I'll tell you why. Because if you look at the NFL and the importance placed on the quarterback, it's almost like the NBA now. I know the NBA is different, but a lot of times the reason Dr. J doesn't like what LeBron is doing is because what's good for the player, the best player, if he's a great player, potentially one, is good for the team. Because the quarterback in the NFL is now that important, depending on the quarterback. So you want to empower them. If I'm the team, it's not that he's going to tell me what to do, but I want to know what's on his mind, what would make him more comfortable. I don't have to agree with him, but I definitely want his input. Let's look at teams that value their quarterback's input because they just met in the Super Bowl. Tom Brady's team clearly does. Patrick Mahomes' team clearly does. They needed some new protection on the offensive line. They just gave the richest deal to a guard and followed it up by trading multiple draft picks for a tackle. Elite guys. Spent maybe more than teams thought they should have. Patrick needs to be protected. We got you, Patrick. Let's look at unhappy quarterbacks with their team. Super Bowl champions, great quarterbacks. Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to me like their teams aren't listening or maybe not even asking. Now, I'm not saying this for every quarterback. If it's Sam Darnold or someone who hasn't proven it, but I'll tell you some quarterbacks I would listen to. I would solicit their opinion. I would like to know what they're thinking. I would like to know what Justin Herbert's thinking. If I'm the Chargers, I'd like to know what Josh Allen is thinking. Until obviously recently with the serious off-field problems he has, I'd like to know what Deshaun Watson thinking. And I would like to know what Lamar Jackson is thinking because it's good for business. It's good for your team.
Yeah, I was listening to Stephen A, and I know you don't care what people think about what you say, but I was listening to it and I was thinking about how people could dissect that, right? When you say Lamar Jackson doesn't take a cerebral approach to the game. Now, I don't believe you mean it this way, but a lot of people look at it and be like, oh, so he's saying Lamar is not smart enough. And I don't think that's it.
Wow.
I don't necessarily
believe that.
You should jump
in. I thank
in.
You for bringing that up.
Right, exactly.
I thank you for bringing that up because I'm certainly
saying,
not questioning his intelligence at all. I'm questioning his interest.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are interested in them and they leave others to focus on other things. That's what I'm questioning. I'm certainly not questioning his intelligence. Thank you so much for bringing that up and correcting that because I certainly didn't intend for that to come across that way.
Exactly. Okay, and so now when you think about the ability to say what you want on the team, I don't necessarily know if you go to these young dudes and say, okay, what do you want? Where should we draft? But very much like the Kansas City Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes last year when Clyde Edwards-Helaire fell to them at 32. Hey, what you thinking here? Well, who you like? And he says, you know what? I like Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And that's a dude they had already talked about. That's somebody they were already targeting. And you go and make that pick. It makes the quarterback feel like he's a part of it. No, Patrick Mahomes wasn't a part of the draft process. He didn't build the board. But when you know you're going to go out and get somebody to help him, let him have a part in that. Lamar Jackson, if you get to that point and you know it's Terrace Marshall Jr. from LSU, you say, you know what, Lamar? We're thinking wide receiver here. You like this guy, and more than whether he knows a ton about it or not, if it's a big-time wide receiver, he's going to like, yeah, I like that because that helps me. And so, no, I don't know that Josh Allen is ready to make decisions about the roster. I don't know if Baker Mayfield is ready to make decisions about the roster, but I know who they are ready to make decisions about themselves. They're ready to make decisions about being helped.
Okay.
Josh Allen knows he loves having Stephon Diggs, right? Lamar Jackson would know he would love to have another receiver.
Right. Let me challenge you on something, and I challenge you with respect. I mean, I'm going to defer to you. I'm just throwing this out.
No.
Obviously, you play for Mike T. You know how well I know Mike T. Mike Tomlin, and along with various guys inside that Steelers locker room. You know how I roll. And when they talked about Ryan Clark, they talked about Ryan Clark the player, but they also talked about Ryan Clark the voice. You had an interest in disseminating a message and making sure, which is why you were considered one of those leaders, because it wasn't enough for you to just play and encourage guys, obviously, to do so, but you were on it. You were on it. We've talked about Chris Paul. Jackie McMullen wrote a beautiful article on him about Chris Paul's leadership tendencies and how it might be different and in your face. And he brought a voice. Matt Barnes, with All the Smoke, alluded, you're a former teammate with Chris Paul, alluded to Chris Paul having a voice. And his voice is what you heard. He makes sure you heard him and stuff like that. That's kind of like you, Ryan. Is it not true that as a football player, you've run across many talents where they are just locked in on themselves? I got to do my job. I got to maximize my potential. We got the coaches and the captains and other people to worry about all that other stuff. Me, I got to do me. Is it not true that you run across numerous players like that?
Yeah, but I think all that's part of growth too. All that's part of the experience, right? You know, Stephen A. That wrote in Philadelphia for 18 years or 20 years, however long it was, wasn't at the point to where you are now, where my contract is up and we're having conversations on the telephone and you're educating me on what's going on. Ryan Clark year 9 wasn't Ryan Clark year 3, because Ryan Clark year 3 was just trying to make a team.
Right. And so I'm talking about Lamar Jackson now.
Can grow into that.
Right. I'm saying two years from now, I might answer this question differently. But right now, I'm saying based on what I've seen, there's nothing wrong with that.
Won an MVP, he's won a playoff game. He's elite every year.
It's about, Max said the biggest thing, it's about empowerment, right? It's about going to him, having the conversations, whether you take that or not to make the pick. It's about him feeling like he's a part of that, and that helps his leadership voice grow.
I'm saying he has to do it, Max. I'm saying he has to be the one that wants it. As opposed to, y'all do y'all, I'm just going to be as great as I can be. He has to do that. That's what I'm saying.
I think that's right. I'm saying if I ran the team, I want to know from my quarterback if I think my quarterback is different.
And if I ran the team, I want him to show me that's what he wants.
Because there's another big-time player who's finding his voice. Brick. Brick is back. Brick is back tomorrow on ABC.
Yeah.
There's a clip for your viewing pleasure. Let's go. Mark, this is Brick.
Mayor Collins, it's an honor and a privilege. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Mr.
Brick, just Brick. Like Prince or Elvis, but I always prefer Prince.
Okay.
Brick is a close family friend.
I see. Yes, well, sir. This family could use some close friends right now.
You know, Sonny was crazy about you. Talked about you all the time.
I was very fond of him, too.
Brick helped Sonny when he was looking for Dante in Turkey.
Yeah. I'm glad Dante made his way back.
Yes. At least he had a few good months with Sonny, but not enough.
Never enough. Look, I gotta go. I've got work to do. We'll keep in touch.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
Take care of yourself.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, Mick Collins, please keep doing the great work you've been doing for Port Charles. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
RC?
Oh, my goodness.
I can't take serious whispering sexy Stephen A. Like Stephen A, that, you know what I mean? Stephen A, slow jam Stephen A is funny to me, man. I'm talking about, hey.
Oh, that's just the taste. You ain't seen that yet. You ain't seen that yet. They got somebody pretty fly there, you know, that wants to get to know Brick a little bit better.
I'll tell you what, Ryan. I used to watch soap operas with my grandmother. She liked Guiding Light back in the day. Stephen A., I got to give it up. I'd like to clown you. That looked like a soap opera actor to me. That's what it looks like. That was pretty good.
Stephen A.,
I gotta be honest.
Stephen A., you are the new Victor Newman, bro. My babysitter growing up, Miss Leota, loved Victor Newman. You the new Victor Newman, bro.
I'm getting ready to have lunch with him in a couple of days. We having lunch Friday. I'm not him. I'm not Sonny Caristo.
Childhood hero of mine.
I defer.